Are you sure?
Here's the 30-second lesson on what legends know. Never ask a bride why she's getting married. Don't wear a skirt on a windy day. Deodorant is not a shower. Don't sniff chili flakes. And don't forget, saving is not investing. Legends don't just save, they invest in mutual funds. Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
As the combatants ready their manifestos for the 2024 campaign, the first set of opinion polls is with us. I understand the skepticism about news TV channels and the "so what else would you expect from these guys" view from the BJP's rivals. But some data is better than data-free analysis. Left to us journalists and pundits who predict poll outcomes after talking to a few people at a dhaba or a bunch of dhabas, and with maybe three taxi drivers, we could conveniently give victory to our own favorites, because that is where confirmation bias comes in. And then go to sleep happily. And if the results are different from what we predicted or what we wished, there are always EVMs to blame. The fact is, you do not even need any pollsters to tell you that the BJP is way ahead in this contest. Even as the opposition's ambitious India bloc has struggled to maintain cohesion, the BJP has set about repairing and rebuilding the NDA. The passion of the partisan aside, much of the talk within the opposition parties is about where they could limit Narendra Modi rather than having him voted out of power. That's the state of play at this point of time. Although the opposition believes the revelations about the electoral bonds have put some wind in its sails, the idea of the BJP's washing machine, in fact, is a campaign pitch with some oomph. Is it powerful enough, however, to turn the opposition's fortunes? Most opposition leaders would still look at the picture more soberly. It is about how to limit Modi to a reasonable number. An insight into the opposition thinking came in a conversation with the leader of one opposition party across the aisle on an Indigo flight early January. The third generation dynast has inherited a party with a solid caste-based vote bank, albeit in a limited geography. I asked how he looked at the prospects and whether he believes his caste's vote bank will survive Modi's attraction, Modi's pull. The caste vote bank may generally be safe, he said, but when people go out to vote in the Lok Sabha elections, they will see only one choice. How do you convince them there is an alternative? He asked. His party and the opposition, he said, was struggling to find an issue that brings a critical mass of people out in the streets. For example, he said, if you raise the Agniveer scheme, only those affected will come out to protest. The rest of the voters will be indifferent. What's the solution then? Has your three-generation politics come to an end? I asked. Well, he said, let's see it like we are in a nuclear winter. All we can do is survive until it thaws. In politics, that would mean preserving your caste vote bank, winning at least a few seats, and conserving your resources. Live long enough until times change. Prescient, I thought, and very wise too. Except just days after this conversation, I saw pictures and I saw TV channels. He was leaving the India bloc and joining the NDA. He probably chose this as his way of dealing with his nuclear winter. At least when and if things change, he will still be in the ring and up on his feet and weigh new options, because he and his party are known to be, one thing they are not known to be is not fleet-footed. They are very fleet-footed. They can move from one side to the other very easily, flawlessly. With self-preservation or surviving to fight another day being the topmost thought on the minds of the opposition parties, each one faces different challenges. For some, like Mamata Banerjee's Trinamool Congress, their state government would be destabilized by any addition to BJP's 2009 tally of seats. The currently embattled Aam Aadmi Party would look to make a bigger statement in Delhi than the wipeout of 2019. For the Uddhav Thackeray-led Shiv Sena, that is UBT, and Sharad Pawar's NCP faction, a relative success is essential for survival. For Akhilesh Yadav's Samajwadi Party and Lalu Tejaswi Yadav's Rashtriya Janata Dal, RJD, a 2019-like performance will make their dream of returning to power in their states that much more distant, if not fully improbable. These parties also have limited avenues for funds. Where they aren't in power, the taps have remained dry for years now and the savings are running out. Those that still rule a state and can persuade moneyed people to pay have the agencies on their tail. This would scare their prospective donors even more than them. All this was about one state parties, or maybe one and a half state, as in the case of AAP. For the Congress, the challenge is of a different order. Of late, it has struggled to maintain cohesion. We've seen so many of its very well-known leaders leaving and joining the BJP. Between 2014 and 18 Lok Sabha elections, its only achievement was maintaining that rock-solid vote percentage of just about 20%. But this does not make enough seats for it to even cross the threshold in the Lok Sabha to get the formal leader of the opposition status. What is the number it should target to convince its supporters and adversaries that it is a genuine challenger for the future? The 100-seat mark would be an interesting thought and can alter Indian politics. But is it realistic? I understand if the Congress officially contests any suggestion other than the idea that it is leading India bloc, to a majority, but its leaders are experienced, having tasted victory and defeat multiple times. They would believe that any substantive improvement, any number past 80 seats, would put it on a great footing. This is especially so with the Haryana, Maharashtra and Jharkhand elections to follow soon after. The results on June 4 will set the momentum for the elections in these important states. The BJP faces challenges in each of the three. It cannot take any of the three for granted. A Congress tally of 80 plus now, would give its allies in Jharkhand and Maharashtra strength. If it fails to reach even that mark, however, it risks losing its preeminence in an opposition alliance as its natural leader. A third disaster in a row would mean an upheaval within the party, and it will also definitely persuade the other BJP rivals to look for alternatives. Some may even decide to take the cue from my fellow traveler in that Indigo flight to escape the nuclear winter. Why then is the BJP looking so frantic? Even desperate. Why is Modi campaigning as if trying to win power for the first time in 2014? Why this flurry of raids and arrests of opposition leaders, even a serving chief minister? Why does the party look so worried if it is indeed in such a good place in this campaign? Good questions, and we will explore some answers. The first is that it is simply the nature of the Modi Shah BJP. For them, every election is like their life depends on it. Remember, for example, how they campaigned, how they threw the kitchen sink at a mere municipal election in Hyderabad. The second, as we wrote in a National Interest 4 Saturdays ago, Modi is now campaigning not just for 2024, but for 2029. What works better for him in that quest than to destroy the opposition as comprehensively as possible, leaving the survivors to contemplate their future? The opposition, especially the Congress, is right to fear a one-man, one-party, one-ideology domination of the kind not seen in India yet. And if they don't like it, they have to convince enough of the voters that this isn't good for Indian democracy. There isn't much time left.